What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Dynasty Rankings Podcast. I'm your host, Nate List. You can find me on Twitter at An Outraged Jew. And of course, with me is Alexander McKenzie. You can find him on Twitter at Jacked Up on Mountain Dew. Okay, Alexander, listen, we had some comments last week from some unsavory individuals. We heard your message. I had hit up Alexander. Somebody in the comments had said, we need more obscure players. We need some guys off the beaten path, less obvious players. Fair enough. Fair analysis. But at the same time, a lot of the players that Alexander and I look at, we see dips in value. We see gaps in production. We see abnormalities in the statistics. And that's a lot of what drives us the directions that we go. But admittedly, we're approaching the deadline. We're more than halfway through the NFL season. Some of you guys have rosters that are completely upside down. Some of you guys have dominant rosters, and you'd like to snag an up-and-comer or a valuable player on the cheap. So collectively, there's a lot of value in this for everyone. But as Alexander and I had talked about offline, it's probably true. It's probably worth digging a little deeper on some of these players that we haven't had an opportunity to bring up. So I think we're going to hit a couple of those names tonight.
Ready.
Okay, so you're ready to roll. Go. All right,
Ready to roll. Sweet. I got my notes, I heard the comments loud and clear, ready to dive into these guys.
Well, then let's jump right into the first player. Now, what I wanted to do was I wanted to initially start with two veterans that I think that there's an interesting level of concern about in the Dynasty community. Now, I think they're on sort of different ends of the spectrum of where that level of concern should necessarily be. So let's start with one of the players right off the bat first, and that's DK Metcalf. Now, right now, if we go to fantasycalc.com, I've got this sorted. DK Metcalf is the wide receiver 17 behind T. Higgins, just above Jordan Addison, but kind of in that Michael Pittman, Keenan Allen-esque range. He's 25... going on 26, but he's fallen a really long way, all things considered, because he was a top 12, top 10 or higher dynasty wide receiver, and he's since fallen 10 or more spots.
Yeah, again, right off the bat, I mean, we know that DK Metcalf is one of the most explosive wide receivers in the NFL, evident by 6'4", 4'3", 3'3". Not a lot of players in history of the NFL have looked like DK Metcalf. So just off the bat, he's extremely talented, and he's 26 years old. Obviously, he's dipped. He's even below, his fellow teammate Jackson Smith and Jigba. But I think really this dip in for DK is more indicative of the offense as a whole, especially with Geno Smith. And there's a very myriad of reasons why DK has his production has dropped significantly. Number one off the bat, he's added in a first-round wide receiver in Jackson Smith and Jigba, a player that you and I both loved and was, number one on our rookie wide receivers. So with that being said, that significantly has eaten, evidently, the last few weeks into his target share. He's still, neck and neck with Lockett, but as we've seen the last 3 or 4 weeks, seeing 6-7 targets each week for Jackson Smith and Jigba, but on top of that, the things that people don't really want to talk about is Seattle's O-line's pass blocking is ranked 21st in the NFL. And then on top of that, Geno, who, known was QB2 or QB3, excuse me, in deep ball accuracy, this year is QB21. DK Metcalf is a deep ball receiver. His catch rate right now is like 47.2%. And then Geno on his deep ball accuracy is 39%, which was last year was significantly higher. It's like in the 40-50 range, which is unbelievable. And then if you look deeper into those deep ball attempts, 0% of those targets were attributed to the wide receiver. So it means his accuracy is significantly off, and he's missing DK on those deep shots, which is significantly hindering his fantasy production, all while still having, a pretty decent target share to sustain a significant floor as a receiver. But I think a lot of people are afraid of the upside now that DK used to present to people, especially with Geno breaking out last year. But again, I think this is one of the best offensive roster and defensive roster. Now the offensive line is a little shaky, but the roster itself is super, super young. And if Geno is not the answer to this team, there's plenty of really, really good up-and-coming rookie quarterbacks in this next year's class that could significantly elevate this offense.
I was reading some articles today talking about let's keep the man in Washington, Michael Penix, keep him close, let him play a year behind Geno, and this would just be an absolutely dominant offense. I think, you know, and maybe Seattle had this philosophy all along because a lot of us talk about, damn, they had 2 first-round picks. They had future first. They could have ponied up and got any one of these quarterbacks. Don't get me wrong. Man, C.J. Stroud as a Seahawk right now would be like a godsend. It would be... Yeah. I mean, there would be Super Bowl contender potential right now, like immediately it feels like. But I agree with everything you said about DK. I think DK Metcalf is absolutely a buy. Again, you look at the players around him. I like Ayuk, but you know, even Puka Nacua, we're seeing a little bit of reality kick in. We know what DK Metcalf is, and we know what his situation will be like. And again, this is with Geno. Right now, I would say that we're at about the baseline of where things will be. We're right about neutral in terms of his production because he's got competition. Lockett's going to get older. They've been leaning on the run. Geno's been a little less efficient due to, again, the offensive line. But you mentioned it, and I'll go a step further. You look at DK Metcalf this year when it comes to his deep target, his rate of deep targets are 27.6, which is top 6 in the league and actually 10% higher than it was last year, 17.8. So he's actually being targeted at a 10% greater rate, 20 or greater yards downfield than he was last year. His 4.6 yards after the catch per reception are his highest since 2019. Top 36 in EPA. And again, he's still inside the top 12 in targets versus man coverage. So he's still being utilized in difficult situations. I know that for people, 7.3 targets per game doesn't feel great. But again, that equates to, on a baseline, 125-ish targets, and it excludes what we've seen from him, the data that I've pulled up here, where we're seeing DK Metcalf with a 14 and a 12-target game. I understand those are a composite within the 7.3, but it's also showing the ceiling that comes with it. So if you're getting DK on a nominal week, giving you 7 targets, well, any other given week could be 10, could be 13, could be 16. So I think it's fairly inevitable that DK is always going to press that 130 target range. And there is a future where we see less Lockett, more Jackson Smith, and DK sort of utilizing and maintaining this role that he's got. So he's, to me, it's an easy buy. He's in a sort of reduced impact situation right now. And I know people are concerned because he's averaging what, 12.8 fantasy points per game. The touchdowns haven't been like they were in the past, but yeah. Very few players in the NFL look like DK or will ever look like DK. And I think that there's more efficiency on the horizon. With that being said, we did talk about like Geno Smith turning back into a pumpkin, Geno Smith going a little more back the direction of who he used to be was entirely possible.
Absolutely. I think it's evident by the data now. And yeah, I think if anything happens, Geno improves his deep ball accuracy in the last few weeks of this season, maybe that could jump buoy his ability or his efficiency that we could see and maybe him skyrocket here. But I think he's a buy right now at this point, just because the efficiency isn't there that everyone loves.
So I've got a question for you. Let's move on to our second veteran right now. Mm-hmm. Does Tony Pollard stink? Now, before you answer, Tony Pollard had a significant injury. This is what, again, San Francisco in January of this year, actually, in the divisional round of the playoffs. A fibula fracture, grade 3 ankle sprain. So big injury for Tony Pollard. Mm-hmm. Then he steps into 2023 with all the workload in the world, all the hype from every analyst in the world because of how efficient he was last year, enters into 2023 and just not the same player.
Yeah, I we talked about the injury, and I think what could be plausible is that the injury that he sustained could have sapped some of his explosiveness. Now, that's probably just an excuse, but he is playing pretty poorly this year. He's RB8 in attempts, but while he's RB8 in attempts, last year he was RB2 in breakaway run percentage. This year he's RB15, and he's got a significantly higher usage this year. He's RB28 in rushing grade, so he's not even, you know, running at an elite level. And there's really no excuses at this point for him outside of maybe there's some potential explosiveness taken away. I think, again, when you think of Tony Pollard, when he was in that backfield with Elliott, you know, there was a thunder and lightning type, you know, situation, and you could see the explosive runs and stuff like that. And you're like, oh, if only he gets more attempts. Well, now he's a top 10 in RB rush attempts, and he's still not, you know, producing at 3.9 yards per attempt at this point. That with Dak playing super well, CeeDee Lamb on a historic run, and, you know, Dallas's offensive line, a top 10 unit. I think that's only the only thing that could be plausible. And it's doesn't give, you know, really any sort of positive notion to anybody who owns him at this point, because he's, you know, on a franchise tag. He's about, what, 27 years old at this point. So his future is really uncertain after 2023. And his efficiency that he was, you know, known for is not there anymore, even with an increased workload.
If I had told this audience, you, that Tony Pollard would be ranked lower than Rashad White and right next to David Montgomery outside the top 15 by week 10, you would have told me to get the fuck out of here. So it's really amazing to see the fall. Again, you know, again, looking at fantasycalc.com, Tony Pollard has fallen over 1,000 points in the last 30 days, which means that Tony Pollard used to be essentially the RB10 above who is now currently Kenneth Walker and Josh Jacobs. It's been a significant fall. The other problem here is you compound inefficiency. Call it injury recovery. Sure, call it that. But he's on the final year of a deal, as mentioned. He's old, much older than many of the other running backs. And he doesn't deserve, he should not be afforded the excuse of lack of production. Like, we will give that to Saquon for a year or so. Christian McCaffrey can be afforded it. Inefficiency for Alvin Kamara, sure. Swift for a period of time. But all these guys have proven, you know, regularly what they can do. Maybe not Swift quite as much. But the point is, he's sort of on the outside looking in this sense. So I understand why the Dynasty community is turning their back on Tony Pollard. Now, it's certainly not over for Tony Pollard. We've seen guys in this age group continue to perform, whether he's in Dallas or elsewhere for that matter. I mean, this is a guy that, who the hell knows? Maybe it's Carolina. Maybe it's one of these other teams. It's like, we got to start over with the situation we have. It could be somewhere entirely different. I have no idea, but I know that it's a one-year deal that's coming to an end, inefficient, turning 27, and just, yeah, as you mentioned, the advanced metrics look nothing like they did last year, despite the fact that the targets are up a target per game right now. Red zone touches are still there. Weighted opportunities are still there. Every metric that says, hey, he has volume, you then zoom to anything else, whether it's EPA and he's number 135, or you look at any of the other numbers. Again, despite the fact that the average defenders in the box are 6.8, Dallas is a top 10 run blocking offensive line right now. So he's still got the run blocking. Dak has really turned on the pass ability here recently. CeeDee's taking heat off downfield. If Brandon Cooks keeps playing the way he is, you would imagine that would open things up as well. But surface level, not concerned about DK, much more concerned about Tony Pollard. But in a landscape of running backs where it's difficult to find players that can perform, I just want to click this in real quick to see. Tony Pollard's a player that I definitely still have interest in, but it's just, this is an atrocious way the season's going right now. But, and I don't know if you had brought this up, like, being a contending roster, I mean, you want to make a play for Tony Pollard.
Yeah, I mean, the usage is there. I mean, all these guys are dropping like flies, and he's still healthy right now, and he's getting, you know, a top 10 usage at the position. Absolutely, I would be trying to acquire him if you need a running back as a contender. But if you are a rebuilder on the opposite end, I'd be moving off of him as soon as possible. Again, because it's just so much uncertainty. I mean, you look at someone like Miles Sanders, for example, yep, that was on super, super efficient offense. And then he gets a huge contract. He's the guy. And now he lost his job to Chuba Hubbard, who is, and now he's relegated to, you know, a 40% snap share while Chuba Hubbard's eating 60%. And I think that's potentially what could happen to Tony Pollard if he if maybe his explosiveness comes back. But I think it's concerned that we're, you know, 10 weeks into the season and we're not seeing really any if breakaway runs at all. And that was what his staple was.
There's no contending team out there in the world that's going to say, no, I don't want Tony Pollard, because they're going to look at it like you're giving up too early. They get him in 2023 and he's got some future value in 2024. It's likely true, but I think what's going to happen is the NFL is going to reassess Tony Pollard and say, you're a committee back. This little once in a lifetime opportunity of your Ben Tate moment is going to end, and you will become a backup to any number of the players that are already on this list. You know, I don't know where he goes necessarily, but there's a lot of landing spots where he kind of becomes a second option and still maintains some high leverage opportunity. But yeah, if you're a rebuilder, I think it's true. You definitely have to get off Tony Pollard. And I'm sure as a contender, he's definitely a guy to own. We were talking about Brian Robinson earlier in the year. There might be some rebuilding teams that are just like, shit, man, I got to get him off the roster, and they don't know what to do, and they don't want to go into the offseason with him. And that price starts to come down quite a bit as that deadline closes in and they can't find a buyer.
Absolutely. Again, it's hard. I think you should continue to, you know, feed offers out if you are a rebuilder. But if you're a contender and you need the running back depth, I would hold on to him, because the usage is so important to the position. That you can't really find that anywhere else.
So speaking of running backs, now let's move to some of the more obscure names that are percolating amongst the dynasty redraft fantasy community right now. Keaton Mitchell. Now, there is a content creator who sometimes gets dunked on more than others. Not going to name his name. I believe he had Keaton Mitchell as his number one running back in the class. It was some crazy shit like that. Even though Bijan was in this class. I'm not kidding. I wish I should find this tweet while we're talking. So Keaton Mitchell gets an opportunity, plays well given that opportunity. Pretty open backfield for the most part, because the player that was supposed to be the most dynamic and explosive player, J.K. Dobbins, had yet another significant, unfortunate injury, which has yet continued to derail his career. But Keaton Mitchell is one of these names that has really popped up all of a sudden. So is this a mirage? Is he a buy? Is he a sell? What's the reality of Keaton Mitchell?
I think reality, if you look at him as a profile, you take away the fact that he played at East Carolina, you take away the fact that he was undrafted, you look at a 5'8", 180, I see him listed somewhere 191, so yeah. A little ambiguity on the weight here, but 4.37 speed, PFF's first in their rushing grade for Keaton Mitchell, and he's averaging 14.3 yards per attempt. And again, it's a small sample size. He's an extremely explosive runner. But if you compare it to someone that everyone's darling of a Devon Achane, you have to be a truther on Keaton Mitchell if you believe in Devon Achane. Because out of Coastal Carolina, he had a 93.9 rushing grade, identical yards after contact per attempt as Achane. Now, again, everyone will say, Achane played in the SEC. But now, Mitchell and Achane both playing in the NFL, and he's still ripping off explosive runs, and he's ripping off 11.67 yards after contact per attempt right now in the NFL. Now, again, it's on, you know, 12 carries, but again, he's got four explosive runs. I just think he's one of those players that I would be trying to pick up right now, because so much uncertainty with J.K. Dobbins that I feel like the Ravens will get to a point where, I mean, where are the injuries going to stop, right? Like, are we going to continue having you on the team or sign you to an extension? If not, it's a committee again. But I think if you love Devon Achane and the super, super efficiency and the speed, and you don't care about the size, this is small school Devon Achane right here.
Yeah, I love it. No, it's exciting. Look, I got PFF pulled up. They're right next to each other in terms of rushing grades on Pro Football Focus. The other thing, too, is, you know, you made the comment that he's got 11.67, you know, yards created after contact on 12 carries. People were pulling out, you know, foghorns when Devon Achane went off his first game. You could have made the same statement, right? So these were guys that we've knocked in the past. Football is still big, fast defensive players. But we're seeing it with wide receivers like Tank Dell. We're seeing it with smaller wide receivers. We're seeing it with these shifty, fast running backs, maybe in the function of particular offenses, given opportunities here and there to perform. We're getting the best out of these players, and sometimes it takes a coaching staff. Sometimes it takes opportunity. But to your point, this is a guy that is incredibly explosive, is relatively cheap. I guarantee if we sort by the running backs, let's see how far we have to go before we see his name come up. Obviously not the first page. Let's go to the second page here. I'm sure he's creeping up here, though. Tell me when you stop. Nobody sees him yet, right? Am I wrong? There's no way he made the first page, did he? Wait a minute.
Did he make the first page? So this is what, if he doesn't make the first page, then I do not understand the evaluation of all these players.
Right there. I'm sorry. There, RB36. Okay, come on.
All right,
was crazy.
All right, yeah. Okay, thank God.
So RB36. So right now, value between Roschon Johnson, Alexander Mattison, and funny enough, close to the value of a 2026 first round pick. Now, if I had Mitchell, I would take that 2026 first round pick in a heartbeat if it was available.
I agree.
With that being said, RB36, starting to trend up north a little bit here. And again, in that Jerome Ford, Damian Pierce, sort of in that speculative range, right? Look, Jerome Ford, later round guy, Damian Pierce, fourth round guy, Alexander Mattison, 1 year deal, Roschon, fourth round guy. Right, Kendre obviously buried for a little bit. Khalil Herbert, later round guy. So you've got a lot of like this speculative range of players. And so it's interesting that he's being valued there because that makes sense. Because people, you know, I think people believe Devon Achane is for real now based on what we've seen over a couple games. They haven't quite seen it sustainably with Mitchell yet. Once they have, yeah, he's going to jump guys like James Conner, but probably Charbonnet if he's in that backfield and he's getting the workload. Yeah. Like where does it end? Do we get into the Tyjae Spears range where it's like Tyjae feels like the guy that could take over for Henry? He's a third round guy. Like I could see it start to move up to one of these lines. But yeah, to your point, like small school Devon Achane, he does bring a lot of that uniqueness to the table. And, you know, this is a Baltimore offense that looks a lot better and they're smoking teams most weeks. So with J.K. Dobbins, by the way, we should mention this. Dobbins' contract is essentially going to be up at the end of this year. It is going to be up at the end of this year. He's going to be a free agent. Now, whether Baltimore brings him back or not, it might actually be better for Mitchell if they did, in all seriousness, because, and not that I would wish this on anybody, but coming back from this amount of injuries, recovery, age, like, it's got to zap you to some degree. And having this sort of thunder and lightning combination might make Mitchell relevant some more. Like this isn't where you'd want to see like a big time draft pick go, an early day two guy or something like that. Right. Because that would make it more difficult. But with that being said, in 2023, like arrows pointing up.
Absolutely. And again, like, I think, yeah, if you love Devon Achane, this is small school Devon Achane, and he's an explosive runner on the Ravens who love running the ball. Right. And they've got the Lamar Jackson offense freezing linebackers when they use the read option with Lamar. I think he's a buy before, you know, this Thursday night game when, you know, he starts getting increased workload, according to, you know, coach speak from John Harbaugh. But again, I think my only concern about any of these players at this size, I think with Devon Achane, but if they're going to be this elite at the inefficient, you know, like someone like what Tony Pollard we just talked about, and they're still in these kind of committees and they're just super efficient. I want to get one of these guys on a Baltimore Ravens offense with Lamar Jackson. And I think he's a must buy before the price gets too high.
Yeah, no, I agree. I do agree. It's just he's a really interesting player right now. Again, like that anybody had him ranked as high as they did, and to see him sort of coming to fruition and performing like this, it's interesting. Again, The verdict is still out on how do small running backs fare in the NFL over the long term.
Absolutely.
So little grain of salt there, a little Salt Bay grain of salt with it.
But yeah, I mean, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, again, like the both of them have concerns about the small size running back. I think really, you know, Achane being hurt already, and with that being said, I think these guys are good in limited opportunities. Let's see what they do with an increased workload.
Speaking of increased workloads, before we jump into some wide receivers, we should talk about Trey McBride. Tight end, Arizona Cardinals. Kyler Murray just came back, by the way. In his first game back, I think he had 18.3 fantasy points, which is something that Trevor Lawrence knows nothing about. So we'll get back to Trevor Lawrence one day. But obviously, in a world that is going more and more heavily in the direction of tight ends, as guys like Laporta have popped onto the scene, and Hockenson has had a resurgence, and Dalton Kincaid has played so well, and Kyle Pitts has died on the vine. How does a guy like Trey McBride sort of fit into the situation? Because I know he's an interesting name, and of course, being in Arizona and dealing with what they've dealt with, seeming like a team that was kind of competitively punting, to get Kyler Murray back now, what are we doing with McBride?
Again, I think right now he's still if you pull up Fantasy Calc, he's the cheapest out of those guys at the top.
Tight end eight.
I think he's a must buy. I mean, over Kyle Pitts in that situation with Arthur Smith potentially being there for 2024 and potentially beyond, if with ownership, you know, loving him. I mean, Trey McBride is tight end two, only behind Travis Kelce in yards per route run at 2.39. And then top three in tight end targets, yards per reception, and Nate's little nugget for tight ends, this little sweet little gem stat for everybody. Pass blocking percentage, 3.2%. He's under that 10% threshold. He's on an ascending offense. It's not ascending offense. We know what this offense is. It's a pass-heavy scheme with Kyler Murray, and Kyler Murray looks like Kyler Murray again. And coming back off the ACL, he looked fantastic. This is a team that's always top five in pass attempts anyway. Give me all the Trey McBride I can get at that value compared to Kyle Pitts, you know, 30-year-old George Kittle. Maybe Kincaid can make an argument. But again, like, this is the cheapest one out of you can get out of it with that offense with Buffalo. But Trey McBride is a must buy in all formats. He's a fantastic player. I just don't think he has the, you know, the appeal of all these other players like Laporta and Dalton Kincaid.
And Laporta has a lot more competition than we're seeing from McBride. Again, like McBride, who's the run game? You know, I realize Connor is continuing to do his thing and there's some wide receiver play in Arizona, but like, this could very well become, you know, a guy to Kyler Murray that becomes sort of a safety valve. And again, you know, he just got Kyler back. But that doesn't change the fact that he's got a 15.9% target share on the year. Obviously, you can see on by the week, you can see this trend going up. Targets were 2, 3, 1, 1, 3. Now it's 5 and 6 and 14 and 5 and 9. And it's stabilizing. And his target share over the last 3 weeks is 32.2%, which is, 8% over Marquise Brown. And obviously, Marquise Brown's got a very solid target share. He's an incredibly slept on wide receiver. Incredibly slept on wide receiver asset. Deservedly so. He's the guy that should be in this conversation. But it just goes to show that Trey McBride's evolution in this offense, getting Kyler Murray back, them taking a step forward. Like, I know originally there, and even I kind of thought this, and it'll be interesting to see how the season plays out. Arizona's probably better off. They've got Kyler under contract. Just sticking with Kyler Murray is a great quarterback versus taking the gamble on Drake May, taking the gamble on Caleb Williams. Take your draft picks and use them in a much more valuable way than moving on from Kyler. And if Kyler's there, we know Kyler is an elite precision passer, deep ball passer. So he does all those things. Obviously, you're looking at the A-dot here, which is on a lot of other quarterbacks before Kyler. So what's really interesting is you can take how productive he's been with essentially Dobbs and some other names, and now you put a way better quarterback in, and necessarily the way that you and I believed Aaron Rodgers was going to help Garrett Wilson, this is going to help a guy like Trey McBride.
Absolutely. I mean, what look at Zach Ertz when he got traded from the Eagles to the Cardinals. He was top 10 tight end throughout the last few years, even at the way past his age apex, he was still garnering so many targets in that offense when Kyler Murray was healthy. So now he, you know, Ertz is hurt on IR, unlikely probably to continue playing given his age. But as of right now, he's eating up all of those targets at this point, proving that he's the solidified starter in that at this point. That I don't see Zach Ertz ever coming back and eating it. If he does come back and eat this target share that, that Trey McBride has gotten. I think he's just, I think, to be honest, he probably is one of the better ones out of that entire list that you showed.
Oh yeah.
I would rather have Trey McBride than Kittle at certain facets. Cause 24 years old, no injury history compared to Kittle. And Kyle Pitts in that offense, in Atlanta, I don't want any part of. Yeah, Trey McBride tied to Kyler Murray, high pass attempts, ascending offense again. I'm all in.
You get Trey McBride in his very first game with Kyler Murray. Very first game, what is it, 9 targets, 8 catches, 131 receiving yards, right? In his very first game. So, like, it's such a profound illustration of what could be. So I agree with you. Yeah, like, he's absolutely ascending. He's somebody to pay attention to. And if you're in tight end premium leagues, I know that there was a big love for Laporta. Everybody was looking for this young ascending tight end to just usher up to the top. Trey McBride could very – how many more games like that does he have to put together before he's above Kincaid in that Andrews-level conversation? Because he's going to jump Pitts.
Oh, absolutely. He's going to jump Pitts. It's just a matter of time.
It's kind of easy money that he's going to jump Pitts. So, all right. Well, that was the only tight end that I think we had on the list. Now, we've got a couple of wide receivers, again, some lesser-known names that I wanted to talk to you about. One of them, the first one that we'll get into, is DeMario. What we have? DeMario Douglas, and I'm trying to pull him up here so I can make sure I've got this thing loaded as I transition screens for you. See if this is going to work. Boom. All right. New England Patriots, Bill Belichick's got a way of finding these guys somehow. Made Jacoby Myers rich. Here we are, DeMario Douglas, who's 6th-round pick out of Liberty, almost 23 years old, and been performing really well amongst an offense that's, you know, just lost Kendrick Bourne to an ACL tear for the year. Juju Smith has been a shell of a shell of a shell. It's like the Russian dolls, like just keeps getting worse every time you peel right. one off. So what is there to like about DeMario Douglas, and is there some future value within this guy's profile?
I think there's future value. I think, you know, obviously you look at him, he's a smaller wide receiver, but we've seen, you know, with other players, you know, significant success at these sizes. Now he's a great athlete with a 4.4 speed, and he's got, you know, great burst at 95th percentile there. But really what's key is, you know, once Kendrick Bourne went on IR, he's maintained a 25% target share. He's the target leader, since Kendrick Bourne went out in week 8. New England is 8th in pass attempts, although who knows what happens with Mac Jones. If Mac Jones stays the starter and they're still, you know, passing a ton, I think, you know, Douglas is probably the top option, with all these other receiving options just being, you know, kind of all over the place. You know, you mentioned Juju, all these other tight ends, you know, getting in here every now and then, Devontae Parker. He's a great separator. He's in week 10, he was top 5 in average separation. He's right now wide receiver 38 in percentage of intended air yards. So that's my concern. I don't think he's getting targeted downfield. He's a great separator, so he can separate from the slot. He's got great speed. I think he's one of those guys that's one of those consistent chain movers in this Mac Jones offense. Who knows who the quarterback is in this offense too, because, you know, New England's probably going to have top 5 pick in this draft, and they could get somebody like, you know, Drake May, maybe Caleb Williams, and they're already 8th in pass attempts. Who knows what happens when, you know, you get someone like Drake May in this offense, and, you know, DeMario Douglas is your most seasoned veteran. You know, if these other guys even stay on the roster that have been playing poorly, you get the guy that's the most accountable and is the best separator on the team. And we've known New England's history with slot receivers.
Yeah, DeMario Douglas right now, 77.1 PFF receiving grade, wide receiver 31, top 27 in target share at 24.3. What's interesting is, you know, I think educationally, if people don't know this, I'm going to sort here on Pro Football Focus. When you're a slot receiver, if I sort slot receivers, ADOT is typically low for slot receivers. As you can see on the side here, you've got very few guys that crest much higher than an 8 8.5 when it comes to ADOT. If I necessarily switch this to wide, obviously this hasn't been adjusted for lesser targets, but you can see the ADOT for most of these guys here. Let me just do this for a second. Let's just go like minimum 15 targets. How about that? So 15 targets. Then you can see the ADOT shoots way over 10, 11. So it's more common for slot guys to be like that. The one thing is, if I switch this now to yards after the catch per reception, DeMario Douglas is 6.9. He's the number 7 receiver in the league. And what's interesting is you have a couple of these guys, Rashee Rice, Khalif Raymond, Deebo Samuel. But for the most part, you've got outside receivers that are the guys with the big yak. It's not oftentimes as many of these, you know, slot receivers. So we're seeing it with him. So he's showing some of the intangibles that you do like. And again, his slot rate 68.8, number 16 in the league. And then again, yeah, you go back and you look at the targets in New England. Well, over the last 3 weeks, and I think you mentioned this, 23.7% target share to DeMario Douglas. And you look at Juju Smith, one target, seven targets, one target. He's second with 9.3 in this offense over the last 3 weeks. So again, you lost Kendrick. You mentioned it. He maintains some of that target share. Bill has proven time and time again that these are the guys that he's willing to ride with year over year. So at his current, at his current price, let's go see where he, make a guess right now. What wide receiver is he going to be in the rankings?
I bet he's like wide receiver 40, wide receiver 50. He's
wide receiver 50. All right. Okay. Let's roll down here. Okay. So we're at 47. I haven't seen him yet. Unless there's some crazy voodoo.
There he is.
56. All right. Pretty close guess. So right between Rashid Shaheed and Marvin Mims, surprisingly. Mims a little bit crestfallen there with the Arthur Smith level usage by Sean Payton. so, you know, DeMario Douglas right now, worth a little less than a future second round pick. That seems fair. The problem is, I think a lot of people know that future second round pick is going to end up being a guy that's a day three at the latest, probably wide receiver. You know, you're probably looking at third round wide receiver, possibly there. I've seen first round guys fall into the second round. So it's really difficult to say, I would prefer DeMario Douglas over Jaden Reed. I would prefer, but admittedly, here's Marvin Mims, because Marvin Mims was a guy that I would have said in this scenario, hard to tell me you would have preferred him over Marvin Mims, but Mims is suddenly here. He's just being utilized in sort of a different fashion. So with that being said, Belichick has proven that these guys get an opportunity, and when they perform, they're going to ascend above veterans that just aren't DeVante Parker, Juju Smith. The problem is, heard a little rumor, Pat McAfee's show, did you hear this today? He had Arlovsky on, Dan. He was saying that Belichick may leave New England at the end of this year and become a head coach GM somewhere else. Like, they said that it's already sort of in play. This was just today on Pat McAfee's show. Really interesting thing. So, look, disclaimer, if Belichick's gone, all this analysis is out the window. There's
absolutely
no saving DeMario Douglas at that point. But, guy, he has the profile and he's performing. And that's really all you can ask for. And his numbers have been reasonable this year relative to some of the other names that we're going to jump into in just a moment. So,
yeah. Yeah, I think there's uncertainty with New England, but it's obviously a buying opportunity with a team that has such a poor record and has a chance to get one of these elite options at quarterback that, you know, that kind of gamble, that's like a low risk, potential high reward with someone like DeMario Douglas, that's, you know, garnering such a high target share, that if this whole script flips and, you know, Belichick's not there, they have a new head coach, but they have an elite quarterback, rookie quarterback, look how well some of these other pieces in the CJ Stroud offense look. So
I agree. So here's a name that we went into the season. I had said if of all the wide receivers entering their second year, this guy who was basically wide receiver 20 could climb the highest if the stars aligned and he performed. Thus far, seems to be some question marks. Christian Watson. Now, Watson was a guy that there was a very significant sort of dividing line on. Some people thought The guy's elite. There's no question. Look what he did. And then another group of people said, whoa, was that not with Aaron Rodgers? Was that not buoyed by touchdowns? Was that not buoyed by big plays? How sustainable is it? Well, since returning thus far this season, 33 targets, 14 receptions, 236 receiving yards, and a high game of 11.6 fantasy points. So where are you at on Christian Watson? Because I know you and I have already mentioned that we thought, hey, it's not improbable that Jaden Reed is the wide receiver one in Green Bay going into 2024, but that's also excluding another wide receiver that's been dealing with part of this workload in Green Bay.
Yeah, I think for the last month, from week 7 to 10, though leading the team in targets, and he has a 40.9% target catch rate. So he's not good at the catch point. Now, I don't know what the quality of the target. I didn't get a chance to look at that, but I would imagine in the Jordan Love offense, it's probably not as good. So it's almost like a snowball effect at this point. And again, it kind of also shows, like, well, is it buoyed by Aaron Rodgers the latter half of the last season, right? Target quality, 101. I mean,
and catchable target rate, 101.
How many quarterbacks are in the NFL?
32? That have thrown a pass?
How is it 101? But if that's
I think that's his rank amongst wide receivers.
Okay. Jordan Love. Anyways, yeah. Target quality is pretty poor. Yeah. And I think some of the problem with him was he has decent, he's wide receiver 30 in average separation, which is not terrible. But again, I think he was one of these, we were sold on this explosive wide receiver who could win downfield, who could win on in-breaking routes, with that explosiveness. And I think there should have been, I would like to dive deeper a little bit more in the data, but there's not a lot of design plays for him either at this point. We've got the injuries that have kind of really, stacked up. He had injuries in the beginning of last year. He had injuries at the beginning of this year. I think part of the concern was some of these players, and I kind of go back to this thing where some of these players are known for their elite athleticism, but their route running is pretty average, right? The average separation, average route win rate. I think Christian Watson potentially is one of those cases where, yeah, he may be an elite athlete, but can he separate? Can he win versus man? I think those are the things that are concerns with Christian Watson. On top of that, the offense as a whole in Green Bay is really not that good. And because you see someone like, again, we talk about Jaden Reed, who's great at route win rate. And is, I think when you were looking at some of those, that slot percentage, you see very rarely you see a player with a, yards after catch or yards per catch that's pretty high. I saw 12.1 yards per catch on Jaden Reed's profile. So he's an explosive player that can win in the slot and win and versus man and stuff like that. So Christian Watson is very concerning to me, is essentially what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to come up with an explanation for an explosive receiver like him that would play so well before to do it. I just think the targets are not high quality. And I think he's has not been very good at the catch point.
Well, yeah, I mean, part of it is the school that he came from, right? We cannot rule out the fact that he wasn't one of these like high level Division I guys playing at an SEC school. You mentioned the injuries, the athleticism put him on the map. Aaron Rodgers put him even more so on the map. One thing that I did want to mention, again, we have this sorted. You can see Christian Watson, number 6 here. If you're watching on YouTube, if you're listening on Spotify, watching the video, he's kind of in that MVS role that Green Bay once upon a time had deployed, because he's wide receiver 6 in deep target rate at 30.3. Now, I know people listening will be like, well, man, he's the deep target in Green Bay. But I don't have to scroll down that far to show you that Jaden Reed, did I just miss him? Jaden Reed is currently at, I think, 27.9%. So he should, yeah, he's right there. So they're actually side by side. So Christian Watson, 30.3%, Jaden Reed, 27.9%. That is because we've seen Jordan Love airing it out, quarterback 5 in deep ball pass attempts this year. Partly because Green Bay has been trailing on 64% of their drives this season. But again, that deep target rate, MVS, was about 34% of his plays were deep targets. The problem is that makes you such a situational player. There's very few guys that are major fantasy assets that have a deep target rate over 30%. We saw it with Pickens last year. Look at Pickens this year. You know, it's just not a part of your fantasy profile that you want to live and die by. Like, intermediate routes are where guys are making a killing in the league. Shorter routes, obviously guys are making a killing. But when you become one of these Jalen Hyatt, 60% deep target rate, he's dead, right? That dream's dead, because you just don't want to become this guy that they can only make it work deep and they're targeting. And again, that's 60% of your total targets.
Yeah.
Right? That's of the whole pie.
Yeah, and again, I think if the target quality downfield is not good either, it's not going to help. And then on top of that, what evident is between with MVS, Christian Watson, you become one of these one-trick ponies. This is downfield threat, and then that's literally all you're used as is a decoy, right? And then the only time we target you is when we have an opportunity to throw downfield. And so I think that was always the concern coming out of North Dakota State was – you know, really his route running ability, there was no question about his athleticism, but the route running, if he couldn't win in the intermediate routes where all these guys like CeeDee Lamb, you know, AJ Brown, all these guys are winning in the middle of the field on these intermediate routes that require you to be able to separate and have nuance in your route running. I think those kind of players, that's nice when you have them out and maybe for best ball as a boom week, but really in reality on any other roster or format, it's really pretty disappointing.
I mean, look, he's got 5 interceptions attributed to him on his deep and intermediate ones. That's 22 targets, 5 interceptions. He has pulled down 2 contested catches out of 11 attempted contested catches. And again, this was supposed to be part of that profile. Like, if you're this big, go up and win 50-50 ball guy. Now, PFF has graded him reasonably well on these deep and intermediate routes. And currently, again, bad quarterback play. Utilization is fairly even across the board for him. So not saying that's who he's going to be, but going back to last year, and we could pull this up. By the way, North Dakota State might be a big reason why we're seeing what we're seeing. But again, the utilization last year, a lot of deep targets. Again, almost 30% of his total pie was deep targets, which is great. But even then, though he got a decent receiving grade and his contested catches were better, they only connected on 5 of 18 with Aaron Rodgers. So it's an interesting case. Jaden Reed is still very, very interesting as well when you mix in the fact that he's the guy that's also seeing a similar level of deep targets. And then when you look at the 3 guys over the last 3 weeks, this includes Romeo Dubs, everybody is pretty close in terms of target share. 16.7 for Dubs, 16.7 for Watson, Jaden Reed at 13.7. So they're all right around each other right now over the last couple of weeks. And again, this is a Green Bay team that's struggling. But the last thing that I will say is that it's going to be tough sledding if you are invested in Christian Watson when he has inaccurate quarterback play and he's averaging just 5.2 targets per game.
Yep.
That's just not going to get it done.
Sometimes it's just that simple. If he's not even garnering enough volume and the offense is inefficient, it's not good for fantasy, right? He may be an elite athlete, but it won't matter.
I think the other thing, though, that's sort of built into his profile, let's see if we can find him real quick. Where would he be? I'm looking for Christian Watson. Right. Here's the thing. What's sort of built into his profile, too, it's so funny that he's right next to Jaden Reed. I think it's also built into his profile that there is some expectation that this is on Jordan Love. Like, we've seen you with a good quarterback. You were good. If he links back up with a good quarterback or he starts playing well, I think there's some built-in benefit of the doubt and his value will rise back up. But again, at the end of the day, people's opinion, fantasy production are 2 very different things. We don't give a shit if Christian Watson's value, because he has 2 good games, is going to jump Mike Evans into the top 25. We care if we own Christian Watson, if he's going to perform week over week over week and give you fantasy points. This is not a... it's not a bond that we're holding on to. I need him to perform. When I want to trade that bond in so I can do something with it, I'll do that. But for now, I need fantasy points. And I think there appears to be too much competition. Nobody's separating themselves from the pack and quarterback play that just really isn't making any one of these players stand out to the degree where we can say definitively, you know, that's the next man up.
And the one thing I will say, the last thing about it is like one of the things that really buoyed his production that latter half of last year with Aaron Rodgers was his touchdown production. And that's just touchdowns are so varied, right? And especially with receivers that are not getting significant targets in the red zone, it's really unlikely for that to be, you know, indicative of what they are over, you know, an entire career. Are you just going to consistently get a ton of touchdowns unless you're being targeted in the red zone? But if you just are buoyed by, you know, large, you know, downfield throws that, or a sweep night where he runs in for a touchdown, I think touchdowns really kind of buoyed his production a little bit last year.
Touchdowns were a huge part of his production last year. Okay. So last player that I want to talk about, and this is funny because we're like, why is this guy even on the list? But he has to be on the list. Yeah, we have to talk about him because his name has come up so much. You guys might remember him because he's been in the league quite a while, but suddenly everybody's talking about him. Noah Brown of the Houston Texans. Athletic profile, not great. Previous production in the NFL, not great. Goes to Houston for his first season. And over the last 2 weeks, if I sort by the game log, 153 receiving yards and 172 receiving yards. And all I want to say before you say anything is, if that production isn't a giant punctuation mark on the statement that CJ Stroud makes other players better, I don't know what is.
I really think that is really indicative of this is extremely indicative of CJ Stroud. I think we talked about a while back about, you know, referencing Puka Nacua as a talented receiver. But we talk about Matt Stafford being the wide receiver kingmaker. I think potentially we have the next wide receiver kingmaker in CJ Stroud. Noah Brown is a decent wide receiver. He's got pretty good size, you know, below average, athleticism, average separation. He's getting targeted downfield to an extent. But I think when you look at all the metrics within here, outside of the opportunity that he's getting because Nico Collins, you know, was out this last game and the game before this could have been, you know, I don't know if Nico was out the week before that or well.
Yeah.
So he may have gotten injured mid game. I think Noah Brown is indicative of, you know, buy with caution. If you want a piece of like the Houston offense, don't have, this is not the type of player that I would want to be invested in. You know, he's been in the league a significant amount of time since 2017. We really know who he is. The fact that he's blowing up right now with CJ Stroud, I think again, is indicative of how damn good CJ Stroud is. Look, I mean, just compare how Nico Collins did with average to below average quarterback play, right? And he wasn't really even on the map. Now he's in a conversation of, you know, top 20, top 25 at the position, right? And Tank Dell, you know, he's an explosive athlete that we'll never be able to see, you know, unless bearing injury, see Tank Dell with other, you know, quarterbacks. But, you know, there was, you know, red flags on his profile. Obviously, he's an explosive athlete and is doing really, really well. I think this is indicative of CJ Stroud. That's the really only thing I took away and looking at all the metrics, all the stuff. It's just if you can get him and Nico Collins continues to sit out with injury, this is a guy that probably could carry you to the playoffs because you got, you know, the number two target earner in the CJ Stroud offense. And, you know, I think CJ Stroud is freaking legit. So if people are questioning that now, I think then you reevaluate everything. So
all I know is, and we had talked about this, there are quarterbacks that just make there are quarterbacks that pump volume, and then there are quarterbacks that pump volume and elevate the players around them. If Houston invests in a wide receiver next year, if they draft a receiver, spend every fucking dollar you have and acquire that guy. Because Nico Collins, good, not great. Noah Brown, not that great. Tank Dell, fine receiver. Made all these guys relevant. The best part is Tank Dell, Noah Brown, Nico Collins, Robert Woods, collectively, all have an average depth of target of over 10.3. Dude, there's only 70 receivers in the league that have an A dot over 10.3. That means there's a shitload more that don't. So, yes, it's C.J. Stroud. The other part of this is, before joining the Houston Texans, Noah Brown had played in 43 games where he had not cracked 100 receiving yards. He had never cracked 100 receiving yards before he came to Houston. He just did it twice in a row over, what, over 150 yards in both games? What? Get out of here. So, to your point, yes, if he's a guy on the cheap that you want to buy to make a playoff run, knowing that the opportunity is going to be there, I would certainly do it. He's not a guy that I have any interest in. Looking forward a year, I mean, especially as he's approaching 28 and really hadn't done anything, not a good athlete. But it's just yet another premier example of what CJ Stroud is doing for these guys. So with that being said, wanted to talk about Noah Brown because I know he's really been a name that's popped up here recently, as rightfully so, with the performances that he's put together. But if Nico Collins, if a contract conversation comes in, he's a guy that we already like. Obviously, there's some rapport, but God, anybody who goes to Houston is like, he's got the Midas touch, right? Like they're just gold. Whatever he touches turns to gold. So anyways, guys, thanks for checking out the show. I thank you to the YouTube commenter. I don't remember what your name was. All I remember is I said to you, I don't think this feels like a helpful corrective criticism. At least the way it was displayed, but it's good because it made us go to a little different realm here, and I feel like there's a lot more actionable stuff within this as well. So we'll continue to try to weave this in. Hard for us not to look at trending inefficiencies as they're taking place with even veteran players with a little bit more notoriety because we see it and we sort of want to jump on it. And I think there's been a lot of commentary that we've done on the show that's been very accurate to this point. So we're not going to get away from what it is that we do, but obviously this really takes a show to sort of a different dimension. Helps you guys make some decisions if you were on the fence already about these players. So, guys, if you like the content, obviously hit the subscribe button. Come join this growing channel. Hit the like as well and drop us a comment below. Tell us if we talked about too many obscure players. We need to talk about more known players, right? Like, we'll go back the other way. We don't know what side to be. Of course, link in the description for the Discord channel, DynastyRankings.com. You know the spiel. It's coming. I did a post on Patreon here recently where I put a little screenshot of kind of the trade calculator to give some people an idea of what it looked like and what is coming. So we certainly have the application. We're working on wrapping that up. And of course, at DynastyRankings.com, drop your email. And hopefully, as we get a little closer, we'll give you guys some notification. It's going to be absolutely free for everybody. So that notification will come in and let you guys know it's time to come test out some of your trades on the new system. And then if you guys are listening on Spotify, iTunes, any number of podcast platforms, it does us a big help if you guys will rate and review the show. They give us 5 stars, right? I mean, come on. Let it break your back. Just give it 5 stars. You know, put a comment. Tell Alexander his camera's been working really good. Knock on wood. I don't know what you changed, but it's been really solid. So thank you for keeping the bandwidth in control. And we'll see you guys next week on the Dynasty Rankings podcast.